Welcome to the continued podcast adventures of three opinionated guys with mics and too much free time. Strong enough to stop a speeding movie rumor, more powerful than a bad comic book event. Able to waste hours of time asking stupid questions to people who have better things to do. It's Dave, Ben, and John. It's Superhero Speak.
Hey everyone, you're listening to Superhero Speak. I'm your host Dave.
And Ben.
And Pete.
And no John. John, where are you?
We'll have to hold it until the show's over.
Alright. Now, John is off tonight. No explanation, he just said he's not joining tonight. So, hopefully we'll have more information next week for everyone.
Stay tuned.
Yes, because we know everyone loves John so much, they're going to be worried about it for weeks.
I'm sure he's just sad because Marvel's winning and DC's not.
There is that.
Well, there is always that.
Why can't they love John?
That's an excellent question. Why can't they love John?
I think he asks himself that often.
So, yes, this isn't helping much of my resolution to not pick on John.
We'll do it for you.
Yes.
There you go.
So anyway, so our Geek of the Week. We have none this week. No one answered the question.
Oh, I'm disappointed. I thought it was a decent question. It reached a little bit. It stretched people's minds a bit. But it wasn't hard. I mean, I saw it in an article, you know, mentioned on a common geek website. So I'm a little bit disappointed.
And what was the common geek website?
IO9. It's a geek website.
It's a good one. Yeah, no. I frequent it myself.
Oh, I thought you said I don't know. You said okay.
IO9.
IO9. Okay. I thought you said I don't know. That's why I was laughing.
Sounds very much like I don't know.
Yes.
It's actually much funnier than IO9, but
yes. The only comment we even had on the question, Nicholas Prom from Comic Reflections Podcast, said that he listened to the episode and has never watched The Librarian, so he was at a loss.
It is a new show. It would not have required a heavy amount of Googling, though, to find out the answer.
No, that wouldn't have. So the answer was... So the question
Well, the
was,
question... It's important to start with the question. This is not Jeopardy.
Okay. The question was, in the Librarian's episode named, what was it? And the Fables of Doom.
Right.
What is the comic book related reference that is written on the chalkboard? And do either of you two know?
Well, I know. It was my question.
Well, go ahead. What was it?
It was the Staff of Loki.
Ah, there you go, Ben. You're the geek of the week. Yay! You're the only one to answer the question correctly this week.
So I am the actual and honorary Beard of Knowledge.
Yes, there you go.
For this week.
Yes. So this week's question, why can't you give Elsa a balloon?
I saw that joke on our site. That's not a question.
Because she would let it go.
Yes.
I thought it was cute. Yes. Okay. I'm going to ask the question I was going to ask last week, because I asked something similar to it before. Yes. I'm going to ask
it. Do it.
Commit to it, Dave.
All right. Name three instances of comic book characters that were created in other medium that then became mainstays in different comic books.
Okay, so what you're asking
comics
is...
of non-comic origin, you mean? There or comic book characters of non-comic origin.
Yes. Like they maybe started on a TV show or a movie or a cartoon.
Right. And crossed the line into the pages.
Yes. They were so popular in that other form that the creators brought them into the comic books.
Now, just for our clarification for our listeners, you're talking about characters from DC and or Marvel.
And or Marvel, yes.
Okay.
And or any other, if you can name one that I didn't think of from Image or Dynamite or any other comic.
That would be impressive, that I don't think any of them have had shows or movies or cartoons.
Exactly.
Well, so I do have a question, a stipulation to this.
Certainly.
I would remove advertisement from it.
Okay.
So it has to be from some other main... Pardon me?
I'm just wondering if that would affect Dave's answer. So it's to clarify, it's a character that originated in a television show, movie...
Or cartoon.
Or cartoon, and that later became a semi-regular character in the comics proper.
Yes.
Right. Because the thing that I'm thinking of is that it has to be story-driven.
Well, yes, yes.
Okay. Right. Story-driven yes. So, comic
yes.
book character.
Yes, so not no just, advertisement, yes.
Not just borrowed for an advertisement.
Correct.
Yes, because wasn't there, wasn't Millie the Model created for advertisement?
Well, we could get some really askew answers, and that's what I'm trying to avoid. Yes. That's all. Right. That's all.
I'm sure there's lots of examples of, like, you know, Superman teaming up with the Jolly Green Giant kind of weird stuff.
Right.
Yes, but Jolly Green Giant, as far as I know, has never made an appearance in a Superman comic book.
He should have his own.
But what I'm saying is, he might have if you include like an advertisement panel in a comic book. If you get technical, it is a comic book. It's just an advertising panel.
I see.
See, this is why we need to have clarifying details, Dave.
Yes, this is true. This is true because our audience is a clever one.
Right. That's why we have.
Don't laugh so hard when you say that.
That's why we have Pete, our resident secretary, here to keep us in line on these points.
That's right. By the way, Ben, I need you to sign a couple documents.
And notary.
So geek news and happenings for the last week in the comic book world.
I can't think of anything new that happened in the last week.
No? You can't think of anything? I think there was a show on last week, and it's going to be on again tomorrow night as of this recording, called Agent Carter.
That's so 1946.
So we can talk about it a little bit. I will say this out loud. Our audience, please don't get mad at him. Pete has not actually watched Agent Carter yet.
You're dead to me.
Yeah, but I'm all down for spoilers. All down for spoilers. I really was excited for this show, and I hope that your reviews are good. That's all I'm hoping. Yes. I'm sitting over here praying.
I will say this. There was concern that I had that I would get to watch it in time if I waited for the stars to align and everyone in my family who was interested in watching it to watch it at the same time. So I skipped all that crap, and I watched it Tuesday night. Like, after everyone went to bed, I sat down and I was like, I'm not ready for bed. I'm going to watch Agent Carter. And I did. And it was good.
It was.
And there was much rejoicing.
Yeah, I mean, it was very well written, as usual.
Now, is the same team that was behind S.H.I.E.L.D., like, I'm saying writers, are they behind also Carter?
I assume to some extent. I haven't looked into the overlap in the cast involved, per se. But I think there are some connections, and they're definitely
because that's what I said.
Keeping the continuity. I don't know exactly. But what's nice is it not only ties in. I mean, it actually didn't really have any clear tie-ins to what's going on in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
right
at present, or so far. Actually had a lot. The new show, Agent Carter. They didn't really do much in the way of tying it to the show to the other show. What they did do was a lot of referential connection to Captain America.
Captain America, the first Avenger.
He actually showed up. Right. They started it with close to the closing scene of that movie. The last scene with the two of them was how the show opened.
Oh, very good. Because I was just watching that. I was actually just watching the first Avenger because it was a really good movie. And thought about that. Like, are they going to tie in that? My thoughts, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, or, you know, tell me if the show went in this direction at all, my hopes were that it was the beginnings of S.H.I.E.L.D. and not how it ties into the other franchises, but the actual origins of S.H.I.E.L.D. itself. Because now the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is sort of the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. show, the one with Agent Coulson, or Director Coulson. Has gone and branched off into a completely new direction, which I'm extraordinarily happy with.
Right. So what it is and has been so far is that it's Peggy Carter working in the SSR, the strategic something reserve. I forget what it's called.
They just kept saying SSR, so I couldn't remember what the acronym
it
was.
It was on the wall, but and I remember reading it at one point, but I can't recall. But what is so? I don't know. Have you seen Pete the Marvel one shot with Peggy Carter? Peggy Carter.
You have recommended that as well.
No, you definitely need to see that. What that does is it basically follows her like sort of, and it's a similar theme to this in that. In this, she is there working in this office with a bunch of other agents, mostly male agents, who dismiss her as being essentially only good as a secretary. Don't, overlook her as being a useful agent. Meanwhile, she can completely kick ass and hold her own. And in this, she ends up doing so on the behest of Stark, because he sort of comes to her and asks her to help clear his name. Because the Senate's sort of got a committee going to hold him up on distributing weapons to other nations and things like that.
All right. Before you get too far, I just wanted to say to everyone who isn't sure, and to help Pete out, Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely were the screenwriters behind Captain America, First Avenger, Winter Soldier, and they're going to be writing the Civil War. They're also the writers on Agent Carter.
Oh, okay. So it's they took the story lead. Okay.
Yes.
Okay, that's cool. And by the way, just for all the nerds out there, it is Strategic Scientific Reserve.
There you
I
go.
Knew. That's I just right. didn't want to interrupt anybody.
Fair enough. Feel free to interrupt.
For all the ones yelling at their computer right now.
That's right. Yeah, because I'm sure.
Which will probably be me in a week when I listen to this. But but yeah.
How
so
the heck did you guys not know it?
Right, so basically, her ends up investigating a lot of the same things her unit is investigating, but secretly without them knowing it, because she's trying to basically keep, because they're all focused on this is all Stark. We need to find this stuff out so we can catch him red-handed, and
right.
As being part of this whole thing, and so she's trying to find this stuff before they do, to clear his name and to see who's really behind the stuff that's going on.
Right.
And I'm not really revealing too much because most of this sort of transpires in the first 5-10 minutes of the show, so of the first episode. So that's sort of the setup. And she has the Stark takes off, but she has the direct assistance of Stark's butler, Edwin Jarvis.
Yes, which I thought was a great tie-in. I thought that was like the best thing they could have done.
It was nice.
Yes. It's James Darcy playing Jarvis. And as we all know, he's the voice of Jarvis, so it was, it was very well done. It was
I don't think he was the voice of Jarvis. He's not the voice of Jarvis.
He's not the voice of Jarvis?
No, no, no.
No, that's Paul Bettany.
Paul Bettany is the voice of Jarvis.
Oh, okay.
And he's going to be playing the Vision when
all right. See, that would have been better then. It would have been better if they tied it in that way. I thought it was the same actor.
No, it would have been. That would have been hard to explain, actually.
It probably
if he's,
would have
if Paul Bettany is going to be the Vision, then how on earth, how do you make
because the Vision's a robot, and
how do you make it in the likeness of a real guy?
Because I thought the story they were going to go with is that. Jarvis was originally Howard Stark's butler, and then he helped raise Tony, and then Tony used his personality to create Jarvis the computer program.
Personality, yes, but likeness,
but not necessarily.
I don't know
how and also, could... I would doubt that he actually recorded Jarvis's voice to make the program Jarvis. He probably just used some simulated British, voice program.
Right. Exactly. Paul Bettany.
All right.
Yeah, she is a similar voice program.
Thank you for getting that one, Ben. Thank you.
I think that they showed a double episode this past week, and I thought it was a great kickoff to the series. There was a lot of Whedon-verse people peppered in there. They had Enver I can't pronounce this guy's name. Joe Badge. He was He was in Dollhouse. He was one of the other dolls from Dollhouse. And I think he played a Russian at one point as a doll. But he's playing this agent who is slightly crippled that actually seems to care about Carter, Peggy Carter, and understands that she's worth more than, you know, filing things.
Right. I actually, one of the things I really liked about it was the aspect of showing how, you know, she feels left behind because Steve Rogers, as far as she knows, died.
Yeah.
During World War II, with that, you know, taking that airplane down, and you know, now she's at the, you know, at this point they're showing that she kind of feels alone until she starts teaming up with Jarvis, that no one's going to help her out, you know, that kind of thing. And yeah, I mean, it's just, it's really cool. I want to see where it goes. And I do think Pete's right, is that this is, you know, where S.H.I.E.L.D.'s going to come from.
Yeah. And so, I think it's looking at the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. little cameos that they showed of her, that was still during the war, you know, with her and the Howling Commandos, taking down, you know, Whitehall and stuff like that, you know, that still being during the war. Now it's after the war. And so now it's sort of this, it fits in with, dovetails with that. And they sort of echo that in other characters around her, like women who had been working during the war and now are having trouble finding work because of, you know, GIs coming back and taking their jobs.
Right. Yeah.
So I have a question for you guys. Did they try to take their own spin on it? Is Agent Carter enough of a different show? It's not a continuation of where, say, the First Avengers, pardon me, Captain America, the First Avenger movie. It's not a continuation of that.
No, right. No. I think it's timeline worse.
Okay, because we'll get into it in a second, but the Ant-Man trailer sort of makes me feel like they can take, like, Marvel can take any concept and wrap it in this, like, almost golden foil wrapper and pass it to the audience, and we're going to accept it because we've been waiting for this stuff for so long. Now, right. Agent Carter is not something that we've all been waiting for. I can't, you know, you're not going to say same thing about, say, Guardians of the Galaxy or Ant-Man.
Right.
Like, not everybody's been waiting for this movie because no one thought it would ever happen.
Right.
Well, but are we moving in a different direction? Do we have a range? That's what I'm at. That's what I want to see.
I think we do, because I think this fits a completely different niche than some of the other things do. Because this is, like I said, again, it's post-war, so it's a little bit of a period piece, similar to the way the Captain America First Avenger was a period piece, but a different kind of period piece. And they're not exploring, they're not explicitly getting into the type of alien type tech stuff that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is getting into, but instead into, you know, Howard Stark's advanced tech, you know, what he calls his bad babies, of things that he's invented, some of which is even just theoretical, but, you know, in the wrong hands can be abused. So I think that they're staying in that realm of these new scientific technologies that are advanced beyond what the world is really ready for, you know, and seeing that getting into the wrong hands, it's keeping it out of the wrong hands and that sort of stuff. And that's where the opening episodes started. And I think it seems to be the tone that they're going with the show, is dealing with these post-war elements and factions trying to get their hands on new weapons technologies to be some sort of game changers. Stark being one of the inceptions of some of those, but I think it will be at some point. Now, now they're only doing this 7-episode arc, but that doesn't mean they couldn't come back next year with another season of this. Right, where they could explore another story that digs deeper into the origins of S.H.I.E.L.D., some of the things that originate, that you know, spawn things like Artem Zola's computer project and things along those lines, delving into those, basically that snowball effect of technology that they're starting right now.
Right, because, I mean, the period, like you said, the period is not just the end of something big, like, you know, the World War II. But it's also the beginning of it. Like, so it's a transition from ages. So they're going from, you know, industrial age into the, you know, technology age and,
right.
and moving mm-hmm. forward. And,
right, and it'll and, probably slowly be slipping into more of a Cold War age. You know,
right,
it's,
right.
It's that cause and effect, that time progression and then the human factor of it, of how it affects the people and what they, you know, have to deal with in it.
Right, and I actually like the idea, the concept of taking it from the point of view of Agent Carter, not you know,
yeah,
right,
not
right.
some other guy that just was had an average story that was able to go through it, you know, or you know even an above average guy that was able to go through it. It's actually a completely different point of view.
Right,
right, yeah, and then one last thing, I found very amusing the radio serial.
I was just going to mention that. So in, they didn't do it in the first episode, but they did in the second half, the second hour. They had this sort of underlaying Captain America radio hour that they were doing this like Captain America radio show that kept being on radio stations in various places that Peggy went. And it was so amusingly antithetical mm-hmm. because it had Captain America as this like the confident, roguish hero, and this female character of Betty Carver,
right,
who was the secretary of the unit, who kept the nurse or something like that, who kept getting into trouble, kept getting captured by Hitler, and Captain America had to save her.
Yeah.
You know, she was the hapless, you know, female in distress.
So it's a juxtaposition of where she is to what
exactly.
she
is portrayed
right.
as. I got
because
it. That's pretty good.
She has
That's
to be
good.
The hero.
Yeah.
And they even did at least one scene where she's you know investigating something, and this guy is actually listening to the radio show. This guy she goes to check on, and they end up fighting. And so in the radio show, Captain America is fighting whoever he's fighting,
right.
while she is fighting this guy. And it's very well choreographed. It's,
yes.
it's
nice. The beautiful. The sound effects line up fairly well.
Nice.
But yeah, I mean, it's amusing, and it's you know, it all fits, you know, with stuff that happened in the 40s, and you know, propaganda still going on after World War II. It was, you know,
of course, but they have the luxury of being a superhero in
right.
a period piece, right? So you don't have to. Not everything has to fit.
right. So, I definitely give it, you know, so far I'm going to say it's, you know, 8 capes
wow.
out of 10.
Yeah, I'd give it a solid 8 at least.
Nice.
Yeah. And if you're not watching it, make sure you catch up on it, people.
Absolutely.
Oh, I have the ABC thing ready.
There were some deeper geek nods in these episodes as well. For one, the company that a lot of the events in the first two episodes were revolved around was Roxxon, which a lot of Marvel fans will have recognized as it's one that pops up in especially in Spider-Man a lot.
Yes,
as this like big oil and tech company, but also there was towards the end, you know, it was when she was going to get the new apartment. Some of the people that were being introduced, I think there was one person who worked at a law firm. And the names listed for the law firm are two, I think, out of the three names for the law firm that...
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Now we can.
Okay.
Two out of the three.
So there was a girl that she mentioned who works at a law firm. And the name of the law firm is two of the three names of the law firm that She-Hulk works for in the comics.
Right.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
that's
it could be generational. It's an older
that's good.
Generation.
No. I'm
and also for those who are judging for their Stan Lee cameo, he will be making a cameo in the
nice.
Fourth episode. So yeah,
awesome.
I just saw that online.
It's already been planned. Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably already been shot. So
oh yeah.
So yes. So yeah. If you guys have not watched it yet, go and watch it right now. Pause this, watch, and come back. All right?
Yeah, we'll wait for you.
We'll wait for you. The other great thing that happened during...
Are you done?
Yeah, they're back.
Yeah,
best.
I know you're supposed to say, yeah, welcome back. Yeah,
welcome
yeah.
back.
Welcome back. The other great thing that happened during the show is we got to see the first teaser trailer for Ant-Man.
Yes, and it was, I will have to say, between the two, Agent Carter was better. But I did enjoy the Ant-Man trailer. It was compelling. It had some comedy in it. It could have used a little bit more substance. I know it was a teaser, but
it was limited.
Yeah.
So Pete, since you saw this, what did you think?
First of all, I like Michael Douglas. He's really good actor, and I like that he narrated it. He has a good voice, and for this, he did a really interesting, I'll say interesting, characterization.
Mm-hmm.
But again, like Ben said, it was a little lacking. I do like the last bit where he says, "Is it too late to change the name?" That was beautiful because it really is. I mean,
it is a really silly name. So, yeah, you have to nod to that, and I like that they did.
Yeah. They're not being like they played it up, but they weren't being campy about it, right? They were being honest about it, which is what Marvel tends to do.
Right. Oh, yeah, and I do like his reaction at one point about like, I forget what Michael Douglas has said to him, and his reaction is like, huh.
Huh. Yeah,
that's right. Huh.
This is real?
It's like, I have no idea how to interpret this.
Yeah. This is happening. Which, I mean, I sort of hope for. I hope it's that kind of...
Oh, yeah. I mean,
have you ever seen... it was a movie Will Smith was in. Oh, God, I can't think of the name of it right now. The superhero movie. He was a superhero.
Hancock.
That kind of superhero movie where they don't make it as bad as Hancock. It was a horrible movie, but that kind of unwilling superhero, the unwilling hero, I guess.
Right, the reluctant hero.
Reluctant hero. There you go.
Yeah.
Right.
I have to believe in that moment. It's one of those points of like someone just came up to you who says he's been following you and paying attention to you, and he has this suit that can make you shrink, and he wants you to wear it. How are you not going to act? Like, what other reaction would you have to that? Exactly. It's perfect. It fits.
Huh. Hmm. Okay. Yeah. No, I definitely agree with that. That was, you know, a great reaction. The thing with the I've been trying to think about how the movie might go in general. You know, obviously they're setting up that Scott Lang is a crook or a criminal. He's caught. Obviously, this is some kind of. You get the impression, at least from the preview, that this is some kind of chance they're offering him. So instead of going to jail, he can go into do this project,
right?
The Ant-Man project, or be the Ant-Man.
Right.
But I'm wondering, are they going to, since they're skipping over Hank Pym as Ant-Man in the movie universe, are they going to at least delve into his past in this movie? You know, like why is he doing this? You know, what's his connection to this other than creating it, you know?
Yeah, I have to believe they're going to have to do some degree of flashback, with, you know, seeing the inception of the suit maybe, and maybe, some version of a young Michael Douglas trying it out and doing some things with it. But, I did read some things related to it. It's been a number of rumors and interview peaks and to that sort of thing, and I've gotten the impression that it is sort of a like he invents this technology, but then he doesn't want it to get out. Like he keeps it for himself, and that's sort of why he sort of loses a bit of how he loses his company, and there's probably more to the story to that because his wife is gone, and that might have something to do with it. It might be related to an accident that happened with the suit. And why he's reluctant to ever put it on and use it, but there was an interview recently with the guy who plays Yellow Jacket in this movie, talking about how he actually has been, you know, had was worked at the same company, was Pym's protege, and tried to get this technology out of him unsuccessfully, and so he ends up in sort of reverse engineering it himself and making his own version. And, you know, and works on it and upgrades it. So the Yellow Jacket suit is actually probably going to be more advanced than the Ant-Man suit.
Yeah. But I also kind of wonder, without directly delving in, are they going to address, you know, some of the darker aspects of Hank Pym from the comic books? Let's put it that way. You know, the fact that...
That's where I think that narration actually is going to work. I think that's why they did the teaser like that, and they may even play that through the movie, like he's telling this story.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
There may be more to it. We're not hearing. It was a teaser, you know. It's like a teaser. What I'm saying is that there could be more. That the story is going to unfold as they're going through it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I personally hope they sort of keep some of that, the darker side of things, just leave them in the dark and not delve too deeply into them.
No, yeah, but I mean, they can easily...
I mean, they already have a second one lined up.
They can
easily
touch on...
Sure, but he doesn't
need
to be pivotal to it.
They can touch on him being, you know, a wife beater without directly saying it in the movie. What I was saying is, like, you know, a parallel between the two characters, like, this is Scott Lang's chance of redemption to not go to jail, but it's also Hank Pym's chance of redemption for something he's done in his past that he's not happy about.
Perhaps, but I don't know if they need to go to this extent of revealing even narratively spousal abuse to have that degree of redemption. I think he can be redemed on a different level.
I really don't think that should be part of the story.
That's what I'm
getting
at.
It doesn't fit the whole universe. As we have as far as the universe, the Marvel universe of this current universe, the movies are generally right now.
Like I don't see what benefit it offers. Like, what does it offer to the story that's of value?
Right, and Disney still has their name on it.
True. I mean, I don't know. Other than, like I said, giving it a parallel between the two characters to have something that he's looking for redemption for, and just to be, there are going to be Ant-Man fans out there who are like, hey, how come they cut that out?
I'm curious why you're so eager for a wife beater hero.
Yeah,
Dave.
I'm not eager.
Is this saying something? Are you trying to tell us something, Dave?
Yes. Yes, and I think of you as my wife, Ben. No.
I was going to say he likes to wear wife beaters. Nice. That's just...
Yes.
Oh, sorry. It's a type of shirt.
He does his own version of Streetcar Named Desire on his.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yes. Yes.
Anyway, so, and also remember that we do have Age of Ultron coming out before Ant-Man. So I actually think that the Stinger is going to be a lead-in to Ant-Man. I'm not sure. I don't know if it's going to be, but.
Interesting.
Perhaps.
So you think.
Well, you know that, I mean, Hank Pym has to be mentioned somewhere. We've talked about this before. Hank Pym has to be mentioned somewhere.
Yeah, I agree.
With the Ultron thing. It has to be mentioned somewhere. So.
And that actually brings up an interesting point, because I read something, I want to say over the Christmas break, that bothered me a little bit. Because and it may have just been a rumor, and I'm hoping it was squashed. But basically, there was something that said that because we had speculated that maybe the technology that Tony Stark resurrects to build Ultron may be some tech developed by Hank Pym. There was something they saw recently that suggested that it actually was somewhat derivative of leftover Chitauri technology from the first Avengers.
Oh.
And that I'm not so keen on, because I don't think they need to keep going back to that well, per se.
Right. Yeah,
well, no, right, and they haven't done that with any of the other films.
No, but I just don't think that. I think the Chitauri were a valid, you know, villain to catalyze the Avengers together in that movie. Mm-hmm. I don't think that it needs to be a continued source for other plot points.
Right. No, definitely, especially when you're basing this stuff on comic books, and there are so many different villains that they can draw from in the comics. It doesn't make sense to tie in other villains that don't belong together.
Thanos.
And it also.
Am I right that they shouldn't even? I mean, the only reason they brought him up so far is because they have the last two
right.
Avengers movies are Infinity Wars. That's
right.
It.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they just want to build. I think that's a slow burn with Thanos.
It's a really slow burn.
But it
in the same way, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is a slow burn for Inhumans.
Okay, but Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is its own thing, and they have to intentionally slow burn things. But I think they're just piggybacking that now.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I think it's part of a larger plan. I think they had that in mind. And I think they purposely are doing the slow burn to prepare audiences for the Inhumans down the road.
Right, a third tier.
All right. But I don't think it makes sense to, in the same year, introduce Ultron and Hank Pym in two separate movies and not connect Hank Pym to Ultron. Because I think a lot of Marvel fans will be upset. All right, yes. Yeah, no, not Chitauri technology.
I'm on Dave's side with this one. Sorry, yeah. Dave.
I'm on the same side.
No. You said it's Chitauri technology.
No, I said I read that and I said I didn't like that idea.
Oh, okay.
I said no likey that idea.
No likey? Okay.
We'll forgive you.
All righty. So did you guys also see the article I sent you? There were some actual Easter eggs in the preview.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
I occasionally read things you send me,
and I don't. I mean, I don't know. I mean, sure, I'll give it to him.
I mean, they're not. Yeah, they're not big things, and they're things that might pan out to something else. They might not.
Yeah, I mean the whole daughter thing.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a good idea. I like it, but really,
right? I mean, Cassidy Lang, Scott Lang's daughter, right, becomes what's the name of the character? Stature.
Stature. Yeah.
Yeah. Later on in the comics and. I don't think they have any plans to go that far with that character. I think she's just a motivation for Scott Lang in the movie.
Right, which makes it a more compelling story. If it's just some criminal who's, you know, who Hank Pym sees potential in, it's kind of hard to get behind it in heart. But to see that he's motivated, even negatively motivated by, you know, his daughter, then it gives it some heart.
If Disney is good at anything, it's making fathers of daughters cry in movie theaters.
Very
yes,
true.
Yes. You know, I mean, it's not like we haven't already gotten a Marvel character being motivated by their child, Sandman. Right. But, you know, it's a totally new idea. It's wonderful. yeah, and then, of course, the other thing that was pointed out in this article was on the screen when they show Hank Pym looking at his computer's monitors, there are close-ups of atoms or, you know, molecules on some of the screens, and obviously they're Pym particles.
Sure. I think, actually, as far as Easter eggs, these are pretty light Easter eggs.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you can't sit there and have an Ant-Man movie and not have Pym particles because it doesn't make any sense.
Right. It's the foundation of the technology. Of course they're going to have that.
No, but this one I liked was the fact that the prison that they show is Seagate Prison, which is the same prison that's been used every same time they've used a prison.
Right. It's the same one that Trevor Slattery is at, the fake Mandarin.
Right. And Justin Hammer.
What if you'll see him there?
Hmm?
But I wonder if he'll run into either of those characters there.
Yeah, that's
interesting.
That's interesting. And I liked the speculation in the article was that perhaps they would make it the same prison that Luke Cage is in.
That would be interesting. But do they have that role cast?
No, but they are making a Luke Cage show. I know.
But I'm saying that if it would only fit for them to have him in the movie if they've cast someone to play Luke Cage in the show.
No. Yeah, I don't think, not necessarily in the movie, but to use the same locale, Seagate Prison, for when they do make the Luke Cage movie or show.
That actually would, it seems they do have someone cast to play that part.
Oh,
there's actor Mike Coulter. So they could potentially, if principal photography lines up, they could have him show up, you know, as random other inmate or something like that.
Right. So we shall see. That would be interesting. And then, of course, they show who's the actress? playing Hope Van Dyke in the movie.
Evangeline Lilly.
Yes. You know, they show her in like a workout fight type session, you know, hinting at, you know, she could become, definitely could become the Wasp because she's already tough. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think
if they do that, first of all, I think they do want to do that. I think they're purposely skirting around mm-hmm. Janet Van Dyne because of they don't want to tread too much on the toes of the X-Men properties. Right. Even though she's not really affiliated with the X-Men, she is a mutant traditionally. Yes. So maybe they're going with the line of having Hope Van Dyne be that essentially in everything but name the same character, but doesn't have those powers via any sort of mutant ability. She ends up having her own suit and is a hero in her own right.
Yeah, I think I think they did that in one of the cartoons, didn't they? Where she wasn't a mutant, she was using the same technology.
I don't know. I don't recall that offhand.
All right. And then the last one was just really stupid. They pointed out that in one of the scenes where Michael Douglas is going into a
There's ants.
Yeah, there's ants. Like, okay, yeah, okay, that's not an Easter egg. He's an entomologist. It makes sense. So yes, that was stupid to point out.
I'm saying these Easter eggs are very light.
They're very light, but silly. It was as you pointed out, you wanted more out of that preview.
True, very true.
Yes.
Hey, look, they tore apart the Age of Ultron. I mean, I was on the internet too after that was shown. I'm like, they just ripped it apart. It's amazing. It's second by second. I mean, I don't know if you ever saw the list where they went second by second.
Oh, yeah. But see, that was chock full of things.
It was. Right. No,
that one had things to point out.
But there's a lot more.
There's a lot of what the hell is this ballet scene and things like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be when they all learn ballet to fight Ultron because Ultron can't dance.
But I mean, if I didn't look at the breakdown, I probably would have never noticed that Andy Serkis was in that trailer.
Right. I noticed the first time, and I actually had to slow it down. I think he walked up behind me when I did it, too.
Now, what I found interesting was I've already seen posts online from people hating Ant-Man, saying that it's going to be their first failure. It's not good, you know.
No, they haven't made Daredevil yet.
They did. It was. Anyway. No. Before we get to Daredevil, because they did release the actual release date of the show. But when I read like the comments and all what everyone was saying, like the main reason people are not happy about this movie is because Edgar Wright isn't, you know, it's not his script. It's like, not really?
News. That's 6 month old news at this point. Really?
I know, but there's still people that are up in arms about, you know, Edgar Wright, not being involved with the project and them changing his script and blah, blah, blah.
Like, yeah. Well, those people will shut up. If the movie is good, those people will shut up when they see the movie. Well, because it's not the first time that Marvel has, you know, made changes with some of these productions. I mean, look at Iron Man, for instance. Iron Man, after Iron Man 1, Terrence Howard, who played Rhodey Rhodes, you know, asked for more money. They said no. They kicked him out. They... Don Cheadle for it. There was uproar about it. People were like, "Oh, well, this is a change." And he did perfectly in it. Even though Iron Man 2 wasn't spectacular, he carried the part just fine. It was a smooth transition. Similarly, you know, what's his name, Jon Favreau had directed the first and the second Iron Man movie.
Mm-hmm.
Was while he played the part of Happy. He was taken off the director's chair for the third one.
He wasn't taken off. He gave it up.
Yeah, but...
They asked him to. He stopped. Really? They asked him to. And he said, no, I think it needs to be in somebody else's hands now.
Right. Because there definitely was some panning of the second one. I don't know how much of that was on his shoulders and how much of it was the writing. Who knows? But, you know, Iron Man 3 was definitely, you know, swung things back the other direction. And
actually, I have like I'm in the camp that, you know, haters gonna hate. It's
sure they are.
I don't think they're gonna shut up after the movie is good, because I'm not. I don't think the movie is gonna be bad, right? The movie is gonna disappoint, or it's gonna. It's either going to affirm my, because I was disappointed with Iron Man 3. Bringing up the whole, this has been going on for a while, Iron Man 3 really disappointed me when they didn't do the Mandarin.
Right.
Right.
Right. And I got over that real quick because it was a great movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to be a bad movie, but it may disappoint me. You know what I'm saying?
But yeah, as you pointed out in the perennial words of Aristotle, haters going to hate.
Yes, yes. That was actually my response on the Facebook post where they were hating on the movie based on a 30 second or 45 second teaser trailer.
Right. Exactly.
Haters gonna hate.
It's funny. I just thinking about it, the fact that it's such a short clip, right? Mm-hmm. I didn't actually realize it was Michael Douglas until probably 10 seconds in. You're hearing him talk for 10 seconds. I didn't know it was him.
Yes. It was funny because I actually just watched Las Vegas last night.
Oh, so you had his voice in your head.
I see. There you go. Exactly. The only thing I was thinking about with this movie is, I will say this, Hank Pym's in the movie, but he's not the main character. Yet in all the cartoons, all the Avenger cartoons that they've done, it's always been Hank Pym as Ant-Man, not Scott Lang. And not saying this is true or not, but one of the arguments I've heard of why the Green Lantern movie failed was because they weren't using, I can't think of the character's name right now. Jeez, I just drew a blank.
Hal Jordan?
They weren't using Hal Jordan in the cartoon. They were using, the Lantern, everyone said this.
Which one is? I don't know who you're trying to think of.
I think your argument.
I'm not in your brain, Dave.
Because the reason that Green Lantern failed is because they got Mel Brooks to write it.
Yeah. Well, yes, yes.
They failed to tell anyone it was a comedy.
Exactly.
John Stewart. At the time, John Stewart was the main Green Lantern in the cartoons, and had been for actually, you know, quite a few years. And,
yeah, but I don't see that being the flaw. I don't think that was a downfall.
I'm not agreeing with that. I'm just saying that's an argument people made. So if for some reason Ant-Man fails, people might use that as an argument on what.
Well, as Plato often said, people are dumb.
That's for sure.
I know, and he also said haters are going to hate. I know. I understand.
No, that was Aristotle.
Oh,
come on.
Get it right.
Sorry. So it's interesting. I don't know. I think it's going to be good. It's a Marvel movie.
I have hope.
They can take any piece of turd and wrap it in gold foil and hand it to us, and we're going to be like, yay!
I don't want that argument to be taken out of context, because I don't want Marvel to think they can do that, right?
No, that's true.
No, I think they know better.
I believe they do.
At the same time, for some reason, over at the other camp, they're taking gold bricks and wrapping them in lemon peels and.
However, you sent an article over, saying the CW wants more DC Universe shows.
Yes. So yeah, they are continuing to expand the TV universe, and I think that's where the DC universe is going to shine. They've already renewed The Flash and Arrow for another season, which is great. CW apparently wants to spin off an Atom show, you know, with the Atom.
Mm-hmm. With Brandon Routh.
Right, Routh.
Routh.
And there's also talk of a cartoon series called Vixen that will tie in with that universe. And Vixen is a DC character, I guess a somewhat lesser known, but she's apparently this African-American supermodel who can imitate the powers of any animal.
Oh, like Animal Man?
Sort of like Animal Man, yeah.
Okay, good. Hand me Dan Powers. We love that.
Oh, no, it's but a woman.
Oh, so that makes it completely different.
Animal Woman!
Oh, jeez. Okay, fine. Fix it.
And they also haven't ruled out that that the Supergirl show that's going to be on CBS could actually tie in.
No, right. They haven't. I mean, it's the same showrunners, I thought.
Yeah, they've actually said that they're not ruling it out. They'd like to try to do it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see why they couldn't.
Right. As long as the networks are up for it and willing to do it, I don't see a problem.
I bet Pete sees a problem with it.
I see no problems.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, they are shining on the small screen.
Most areas.
I don't know how long they're going to keep that up, though.
Yeah.
Oh, they have to do that. They have to keep it up. That's where they're going to have to... if they don't do that, they're going to fit. They're not doing anything then, right? I want to sound pessimistic about the whole thing. I like DC and all, but they're not leading it.
Yeah.
No. You know, there won't be any DC movie this year.
Nope. Well. Poor that, there was a rumor actually that I read about that almost seemed to suggest there would be one this year, because there was some rumor that spun around that the Batman v Superman movie was actually going to be split into two parts, and the first half would actually be at the end of this year, and the second half in 2016. But they squashed that rumor.
Oh, okay.
Oh,
that's a shame.
It was like, no, it's going to be really long. They didn't say that.
No, I think the only thing that in all honesty, is they're building up this great universe on the TV, and they're not going to cross that over into the movies. I think that's really the short-sightedness. You know, they need to do that, I think, at some point.
Well, they're not going to, and I don't think... Again, I don't think they can. I think the way that they've staged it, it's going to be really difficult, because they don't want to have to adhere to the casting that they have on the small screen.
Well, not only that, they don't want to approach it the same way that Marvel did. All right, so Marvel's in the lead, right? And you're DC, and you're looking at what Marvel did.
They don't want to be copycats.
They don't want the audience to think, oh, well, they're just doing the same thing Marvel did, you know?
Yeah.
So I can see where their dilemma is. But that's why they're probably putting a lot of their energy into the shows. Which I'm happy. I mean, I want to see more. I'm not against DC. Don't get me wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see more of those characters in these arenas, like the TV and movies. But they fell behind. They fell so far behind that anything looks like ketchup, you know?
Right, and they'd rather look like mustard. I understand.
Yeah, yeah. Another condiment.
Yes.
Mayonnaise,
okay, yeah.
Yes.
Yes, DC is the mayonnaise of the movieverse.
Would you say they're falling light years behind? Maybe a warp drive would help them.
Oh.
Nice segue.
Yes, we're going to take a bit of a left turn from comic books. I forgot I was going to post that on our Facebook. I'll do that when we're done. But go ahead. Ben.
Well, it seems more of some life imitating art is happening in the scientific community, in that NASA is actively working on building a warp drive, yes, a la Star Trek. They've actually have like prototypical designs, like, you know, mock-ups of what the ship may look like, based on this theoretical technology that they have in mind. So it's not just a prototype that's just sort of, you know, we're making up what the ship could look like. That's actually a practical design,
right,
based on the technology that they are proving out mathematically.
Yes, so. And they're calling their prototype in the design the Enterprise.
Of course they are.
Yes. Why wouldn't they?
The ISS Enterprise. Because that rolls off the tongue.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, you know. They can't do NCC, right?
I was going to say they couldn't.
Yeah. NCC. I'm sure they could find a way.
Well, NXS was what they used for prototype ships in Star Trek.
Yeah, you're right. But this is IXS.
I know. They should do NXS.
Right. I assume the I is for international.
Oh, yeah. That's probably true. Yeah, but I mean, it's funny.
We haven't fully integrated into a global community yet, right?
Yeah.
So we can't do what Star Trek did. I'm sorry. We still have to use international.
The pictures that'll be...
not yet merged into a single.
I'll post them online. But yeah, state. It has a, it even has this like a saucer section, and
it looks remarkably like the Enterprise. I just want to say it's, and if not the Enterprise, go back to
some.
It
at least looks like some sort of Star Trek type ship.
Yeah.
Definitely. Which
I'm very happy with. I'm so happy with.
It. Right.
And you're gonna take the first trip on there, Pete?
No.
The second trip, maybe.
I'm not stupid. Right. I'm not a test pilot. I never will be, and
you never take the first trip, Dave.
Right. Okay. I will take the next one. Thank you.
Yes.
Take like the 43rd trip.
See, what I'm really happy about is that they didn't give up on this thing, you know, that everyone said, "Oh, it's stupid." No, it's not stupid. Yeah. We just haven't figured it out yet.
Right.
that's where we're at, and I'm so I.
Well, I think it was, it might have been like 10 years ago, maybe not quite that long ago. I was reading an article where NASA was working on an engine prototype that pushed like a force energy out of it, as opposed to air, which is what they use now to maneuver around in space.
Yeah.
And they called them impulse.
Engines. That would make sense, yes.
Yes, I mean, and it makes sense. The name makes sense for what it does. It's sending out a pulse of energy to push you.
I mean, science fiction has its basis in reality. That's what makes science fiction.
Right.
Well, Star Trek.
And not fantasy. No.
You're right, you're right.
The difference between sci-fi and fantasy, because Star Wars is fantasy.
Fantasy, yes.
Star Trek is sci-fi. It's because science fiction has a source of truth, right? A source of reality.
Right.
Yeah, that's true.
It's based on the principle of what can we extrapolate from where we could be, you know, X number of years from today, technologically.
Yes.
And they're not always right. I mean, we don't have hoverboards this year.
That's right.
But
we're flying cars.
Right.
But Nike is working on...
Or Jaws 17.
Jaws 17. Rocky, but no...
They are working on the self-lacing shoes.
Finally.
And they said that they will be out this year.
Why weren't they working on them in, like, you know, 2010? Come on.
Right.
So they had 5 years to get them, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good question.
Everyone knew this year was coming.
Where's my self-hydrating pizza?
Exactly.
And my self-adjusting jacket.
Yeah.
Pizza Hut, get on it. Come on.
Well, thank God they were wrong about fashion, and we don't have to wear two ties when we go to work.
Yeah. And have fax machines all over our house.
Oh, I'm glad they got that one wrong.
Oh, my God.
Actually, I am kind of happy because, you know, they were... You have to think of multiple universes, right? Because that was the future of a universe.
True,
We got the universe where the internet was freaking invented.
Yes.
And we can have calls on Skype.
Yes. And it distracted the people too much at Nike to work on the self-lacing shoes.
Exactly. No. As long as we focus our energy in things that I can enjoy, then I'm happy.
Yes. And as long as you can watch all the cat videos you want.
Exactly. Come on.
That's what it's all about.
That John. Over flying cars, for sure.
Yeah.
Cat videos over flying cars. I like that.
Just got the name of the episode.
No.
Right there.
Oh, okay.
Cat videos on flying cars?
Yes, cat videos over flying cars.
Over flying cars.
Yes.
I don't know if I had my choice. If there was a point in time where I could go back and influence that decision, I think I'd take flying cars over cat videos.
I like the cat videos. Can you think of all the destruction flying cars would cause?
Oh, I was going to say, that's going to
I would like... say that flying cars in the hands of people, not a good idea.
That's a bad idea.
Google self-driving flying car.
That's what I'm talking about.
So behind.
It took longer to get the self-driving car than it will take to get the flying car, I think. So that we don't have as many accidents when we get to the flying cars. Because that is absolutely correct. If we had taxi drivers in the air.
God.
Could you imagine?
They're bad enough on the ground.
The shrapnel flying down on your house?
Scary.
It is scary.
I choose not to look out the windows when I take a cab in New York City. I just try to find something else to focus on. It's like, I know I'm going to get there alive, so I don't want to look at the evidence to the contrary as I'm going there.
Right? Yes. Yes, you believe you'll get there alive.
Yes.
But you also believe in a universe where a man could shrink down to the size of an ant.
I didn't say that.
Oh, okay.
I believe in the universe.
I just believe that it's entertaining to think that that could happen in movies. So.
All right, gentlemen.
I need to be entertained.
And hopefully we have entertained you.
Yes.
You always do.
Yes. If we haven't entertained you, let us know. And if we have, let us know.
And let others know. That's always a good thing.
Don't forget our question of the week. If you think you know the answer, tweet it at us with hashtag StumpTheGeekSpeak.
Yes, definitely don't forget. I've already forgotten.
Give the question again.
Name three instances of comic book characters that were created in other media, such as television, cartoons, or movies that have been crossed back over into comics. Or crossed into comics. So, yes. Alrighty. Do you guys have anything else to add before we sign off?
Gotham still stinks.
Yes, it does. Well, on that note, ladies and gentlemen, as always, don't let your cape get caught in the door. Have a good week. Speaking of capes, you can tug on ours by joining the conversation on Facebook, Twitter, or Google+ at Superhero Speak. If you have any comments on my bad jokes, you can email me at dave@superheroespeak.com.
You can also subscribe to our podcast through iTunes, Stitcher, and various other channels. Or if you'd like to tease the beard of knowledge, you can email me at ben@superheroespeak.com.
We also occasionally rant about things on our website, superheroespeak.com. Or, if you'd like to further discuss the prowess of Rainbow Dash versus anybody in the greater geek universe, you can email me at john@superheroespeak.com.
And don't forget to check out our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. companion show, Agents of Speak, which you can watch live most Tuesdays around 9 p.m. on our Google+ page, or archived on our YouTube channel. Now let go of our cape.
Superhero Speak promo, take one. Get your promo done.
So do you read comic books? Do you enjoy comic book movies? Well, then you should be listening to Superhero Speak.
What's that, Dave?
It is a weekly podcast where we talk about comic book movies, TV shows, cartoons, and all other things comic book related.
That sounds great. Who hosts it?
Well, I host it.
Oh, I'm out.
We also have Ben. You're one of the hosts.
Oh, you lost me.
Okay. We also have John.
I'll do anything for money.
If John's there, I might show up every once in a while.
And occasionally we have Christopher Walken.
Yeah, but once in a while when things are rough on the budget, I might step in and help out.
It's a good thing we have that padding in the budget to have him show up every once in a while.
He shows up for Oreos and orange juice. So I don't know.
Have you seen his IMDb page? He needs the work. Really.
The Headless Horseman was a hell of a role. Hell of a role.
If you want a podcast that feels like the conversations that you have in your local comic book shop, then you should check us out on superheroespeak.com, iTunes, and Stitcher.
Podcasters, I'm going to have you redo that entire promo. It wasn't working for me at all.
It was the plaid and the stripes, wasn't it?
Listen, you had an hour at Mood. I don't know what you did with your time.
Mostly slingshotting bow ties.
So, Mr. Gunn, what is your favorite comic book?
Personally, I like The Adventures of Superman because I love that costume. It's so skin tight and it's adequately designed.
Have you ever heard of the Ambiguously Gay Duo?
I have not.
I think you would enjoy them.
Oh, it sounds naughty. David, you rascal.
Oh my gosh.